This week's major spoilers podcast goes out to the following fine and faithful spoilerettes: Michael Kaiser, Tawny Jacobson, Ethan Boyd, Aaron Barnes, Dominic Lafold, Fisher Mollard, Nathan Olson, Jeffrey Domingo, Ramiro Barrera Palma, whose name is always fun to say, Christopher Singer, Jorge M. Taranje, Steve Jukas, Jimmy Dunn, Douglas Hopkins, Hannah Jones, Antonio Juan Suarez Colon, Ahmad Abdelaziz, Carl Stenberg, Oscar Rodriguez, Eric Krenson, Frank Andrusovich. I love that name too. This one goes out to each and every one of them, and we hope you enjoy it.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, Tetsuo! Because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air!
Welcome to issue 546 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and thank you, dear listeners, for using that Amazon link over at Major Spoilers to make your purchases. A little bit comes our way, keeps this show going, and makes sure that we go uninterrupted, even when we don't have Zach here this week. Maybe if enough people went to shop every day at Amazon through that Amazon banner, mm-hmm. we could afford to hire Zach away from his other job.
Right.
So he could
can't be that
scrub
hard.
My toilet.
They barely pay him.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Well, listeners, make it happen. Amazon.com through that link, majorspoilers.com. Lots going on in this episode, including a look at Akira. Not a complete look at Akira, but a partial look at Akira.
Don't have that much time.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be another 546 episodes.
Yes, why don't we get to some news then? So I hear the CW is working on an Hourman television series. There's another Wolverine movie in the works. Unfortunately, the South Park video game is delayed, but the first trailer for the X-Men Days of Future Past has arrived. Let's see which one we're going to talk about and spin that Wheel of Destiny. Wheel of Epic News Destiny. Right there on the CW... CW working on an Hourman television series. This is out of the Hollywood Reporter. This is the only source of confirmation on it, but it looks like the CW is looking to expand its comic book universe. Of course, they've got Smallville, Arrow, and now it looks like, Flash is in development. And now it looks like they're going to be doing Hourman. This one is a little bit different, though. This one's going to be a little bit different. According to the article over at Hollywood Reporter, Hourman centers on a brilliant yet troubled pharmaceutical analyst who discovers that the visions that have plagued him since childhood are actually glimpses of tragic events occurring 1 hour in the future. Determined to win back his ex-wife and son, he heroically prevents these tragedies from unfolding, finding both purpose and redemption along the way.
Wow.
You know what this sounds like, Rodrigo?
What?
Back in, what was it, the 80s, 90s?
Wait, hang on. Does it sound like not at all the character of Hourman?
No, it doesn't sound anything like the Hourman
no,
or whatever.
Yes.
So it sounds like a lot like Morning Edition. Remember that show?
Early edition.
Where the guy with the cat would bring the paper that's 24 hours ahead of time.
Right.
And he had a day to solve somebody's problems. And then he'd solve them and everything was good.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Matthew, this is not the Hourman that we know. Our Hourman is also working with pharmaceuticals. But he's a bit of a pill popper.
Well, sort of, kind of. The original Hourman, Rex Tyler, was popping pills in the 40s back when it wasn't, you know...
Goofballs.
He was hopped up on the goofball, clearly. But the thing about it was, in the 40s, popping pills was one of those things where he's like, hey, it's two St. Joseph vitamins. He's saving the day, you know. In the 40s, they'd put radiation on your face to try and get rid of a scar. So things were different then. But yes. Eventually, they did a whole thing where his pill popping became a huge issue. His son later became an Hourman. At one point, there was a robot from the future who actually, I think, is the only one who had prophetic powers to my knowledge. But yeah, there have been three or four Hourmen, and this ain't any of them.
Yeah, I think that this was actually a move to after, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came out and Marvel's like kind of exploring their little TV/movie universe. This is just a move on the CW to try to prevent them from having a Maverick show. That's those are actually Maverick's powers from Alpha Flight.
I don't know what to make of this. I mean, on the one hand, it sounds cool. I was hoping it was, you know, hey, I developed these pills that give me super strength for an hour or super speed for an hour or phase through wall. But that's the problem, right? Today, people would say, oh, that is just pop a pill. Although they probably could get pharmaceutical companies to pay out the nose to advertise during this show.
So the crazy thing is that, like, this is what I kind of don't understand about this market right now is that, so who knows where it starts, right? They're like, okay, let's develop the character of our man for a TV show. They look at it and they say, well, we can't do that. It's like, all right,
let's promoting drug use.
Yeah, let's change his powers so that the hour thing is something else.
Right.
So now you have a character called Our Man, mm-hmm. who doesn't have the same powers as Our Man. But also, it's not like it's Batman or even, you know, something like, I don't know, like Blue Beetle or something that's been in like some cartoons or something like that. Like,
right.
This is a fairly unknown character. What's the point of that name recognition
mm-hmm.
that doesn't exist mm-hmm. because nobody's ever heard of Our Man?
Right.
Yeah.
And like, this is in the situation.
It's that, well, and, you know, if we look at the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. example specifically, somewhere that they did it very successfully in the S.H.I.E.L.D. Avengers-type stories is the character that we see in the movies and on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. called Nick Fury, who doesn't act like the Nick Fury of the classic comic books.
But he has all the same powers.
Yes, none.
Yes, unlimited resources.
He's got all the powers of Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. People love Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. People love that Nick Fury, that look of Nick Fury with the eye patch and the long mm-hmm. black coat. People who are really, really attached to the old school Nick Fury, James Bond guy with a cigar, hate the Samuel L. Jackson Nick Fury.
They still got their David Hasselhoff.
Yeah, I don't. That
is awful. You're
Oh no, there's a lot of people that love.
You know, that's a good point though. I mean, we might be looking at this from the wrong angle. This might be a way to rehabilitate Our Man into something else.
They're not. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to buy goodwill with the Our Man name. They're trying to take the existing Our Man property, such as it is, and build it into something else.
Yes, definitely.
Or something super successful. Because if you go in and you say, I'm going to do a comic book, or I'm going to do a comic book adaptation of Aquaman, people know you're Aquaman. Even if it's just, oh, he was on Super Friends and ha-ha, he talks to fish, people are going to be like, we think we know Aquaman. If you say Our Man, there are going to be 150,000 people around the world who go, that's not the Our Man we know. And then there could be 5 or 6 million people weekly who sit down and go, but that's the Our Man we love.
Yeah, so, just like Tom Welling, kind of like just like mm-hmm. The Arrow. You know, there's a lot of people, and I haven't watched Arrow. I've got the Warner Brothers sent me the first season Blu-ray DVD.
It's hard to see behind all those beer bottles.
Yeah, that I've been getting ready to start on. But apparently the second season has gotten a lot more intense and people are really liking it. So, I mean, I don't have a problem with it.
I hear in the second season, nobody wears a shirt.
What?
Right. Not even the girls.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody's like standing behind well-placed potted plants.
And yep.
Street signs.
Yeah. He's always drawing his arrow across, like with his arm across chest. Exactly.
He's like, hey, Felicity, look over there behind that conveniently placed chest high bar. And she'll be like, over here?
And she's holding two bottles of whiskey.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a problem if they're going to change up the characters. You know, if it means that more people can get interested in a way in these characters, I'm okay with that. I mean, when you look at Smallville and what they did with Booster Gold and Hawkman and the Golden Age Flash and who else did
Cyborg
they have?
Was Cyborg in
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Cyborg was in it. The Green Lantern or Green Martian Manhunter. They changed a lot of stuff in there and people were totally okay with it. In fact, a lot of comic book fans were okay with mm-hmm. it too. And I think that as we've seen time and time again, especially with DC, not so much with Marvel, but they split that universe off. So we have our TV universe over here,
sure.
our multiple comic book universes, then we have our movie franchise universe, and then we have our cartoon universe.
And each superhero gets its own universe. Like mm-hmm. a cohesive superhero universe in movies is a new thing.
But I think that's kind of works against Warner Brothers and CW because each character has their own universe. It's not like they spun Arrow out of Smallville, which right. they could have done.
Right.
You can't join those together.
Well, you can't, but that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
Because that allows the writers to write whatever they actually want to write.
They're gonna that's do the that
problem.
Anyway.
That's the problem with continuity.
Yeah.
Multi property continuity.
Mm-hmm.
You end Smallville with Clark taking on the mantle of Superman. You can't take Green Arrow and throw him into a world where Superman has just debuted and expect him to have the same kind of impact. It's that screenwriter's rule of have one outrageous element. And the problem that you run into in comics is people keep trying to do, oh, well, we need to give everything the same origin, or we need to tie everything back into the same crisis or whatever it is. And with a self-contained Arrow universe, I think they did a really smart thing in that you don't have to deal with any of the fact that he slept with Chloe and he slept with Lana. And I think he argued with Clark over the rights to Lois Lane, but Clark won out at the end. I mean, you can tell whatever story you want without having to address the continuity of Smallville. And I think that's really smart in its own way. I have said from the beginning about the Marvel Cinematic Universe is there are thousands of ways that this could have blown up in their face, and more power to them that it worked. But it's not the only way to do it. And I don't think it's going to be the only successful way either. I kind of want to see this Our Man show, if only just to justify whether I can say, this sucks. Worst episode ever.
Now don't judge. Don't prejudge.
Is there going to be... Is there going to be a little cat that helps Our Man?
That would be cool. Played by the Salem puppet from Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll be interested to see. I mean, obviously, it sounds like they're going to put Flash ahead of Our Man because
he's faster.
Well, yes. But also because the Flash will debut on the Arrow on Arrow before they spin it off into his own show.
Call that Flash show?
I think it's called The Flash.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Sure, they can.
No, this is no. CW has to have an oblique title that sounds cool because it's not The Green Arrow. It's not the Superboy. It's not, you know, that Birds of Prey show wasn't called The Batman's Daughter and some other broad. You have to have that cool kind of name, and I think with The Flash you can call it like Velocity or like Don't Trip.
What city is The Flash in?
Central City and Central Keystone City. City depending
Keystone.
On
Keystone. You could call it Keystone. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Especially if you see the Flash like run really quick up until he gets to a corner and then hop on one foot to turn around and then spit off
like Daffy Duck in the old cartoons. All right, listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com. You can comment on this or any story that we have up there. In fact, you're going to want to head over there over the next couple of days. We've got the Major Spoilers costume contest has just closed. We showed all of the entries earlier this week. Wednesday of this week, depending on when you're listening, we're going to put up the top 10 semifinalists. And then on Friday, we're going to narrow it down to either the top three or five. I think probably five. And then voting will open and you will get to vote on who you want to win in the Major Spoilers costume contest. So many great entries this year. It was so hard to narrow it down. I mean, just some fantastic costumes. There's this one guy. I know in the picture that I posted doesn't do it justice. What's his name? Captain V?
Oh, Citizen V.
Citizen V. The thing is, if this person makes it into the finals, I can't wait to show that costume because there's something underneath that mask.
Right.
And it's awesome.
There's what should be underneath that mask.
Yes, exactly. It is really well done.
Citizen V's mask.
Yes. Yep. So really well done. You're only getting a peek at all of the entries that are there. We'll expand more throughout the week. And then, of course, Friday, voting will open and we'll have that open for... week and a half, maybe, mm-hmm. I think, just in time for everybody to get over there and vote and see what happens. Also, while you are thinking about Major Spoilers this week, what we would love for you to do is head over to podcastawards.com and cast your vote for Major Spoilers in the cultural arts category. You can vote daily between now and November 15th. We are hoping to bring home an award for all of the podcasting work that we do, and you can help us out, podcastawards.com.
My mother-in-law learned how to run a computer so she could vote.
Well, that was awful nice of her. Tell her thank you. We should also say thank you to Jason Inman, who went to a Stan Lee's Kamikaze Comic Expo this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He took some great cosplay video and took a huge gallery of characters in their costumes, including what's the reverse gender? That's Rule 38?
Rule 63, I think.
Whatever it is. He-Man.
Rule 34 is the one about pornography. I think 63 is the one about inverted gender.
Okay, so whatever it is. Inverted gender He-Man. Really cool costume. And whole lot more over at majorspoilers.com.
He-Man's costume doesn't have a top.
Yes, it does.
Not much of one.
Well, it's a top. You'll have to go over to majorspoilers.com and check that out for yourself. Oh, and if you want to see Sif in nearly nothing from the upcoming Thor movie, holy crap, you need to go check out the premiere gallery that Disney sent us. Sif looks mighty good in that almost nothing dress that she is wearing. That is over at majorspoilers.com. Bonus tracks. Oh, my gosh. Bonus tracks this month. Dungeons and Dragons, Rodrigo.
Yeah.
It's a pain to get through, but I hear everybody over at members.majorspoilers.com is loving it. There's also some scary stories.
Yeah.
That I got up there a little late, but I will still say it's in that spirit of scary stories.
Yeah.
Some video content up there, some original art, some bonus content. So for everybody who's a VIP, how do you become a VIP? Well, you either sign up for a bronze, silver, or gold, a $2, $5, or $10 a month membership, and you help us out, just like when you click on that Amazon banner. You help us out and get a little something in return. It's over at members.majorspoilers.com.
Oh,
let us do some reviews.
Reviews.
So last week, I was supposed to have watched a movie. So this week, I actually watched it. It's Necessary Evil, Supervillains of DC Comics. This is a direct-to-video movie put out by Warner Brothers. And it's a feature-length documentary. It's about 99 minutes long. It was a little bit longer. It felt a little bit longer than that. I was watching it last night, and I was like, ooh, this has got to have about 15 minutes left. And I looked at the timer, and it's like 45 minutes left. This is really a bunch of interviews with creators. So some really well-known creators like Jim Lee, Jeff Johns, Dan DiDio, of course, are all interviewed. Marv Wolfman. The list goes on and on. And they just really kind of talk about, what does it mean to be a villain? What are the things that make up the villain? They go in and they talk about the different types of villains, the monster, the mad scientist, the femme fatale, and so on and so forth. And they just kind of touch on briefly in the 90 minutes what makes some of the villains that we know creepy. What makes them villainous? They try to touch on a little bit of the psychology. There's a psychiatrist or psychologist from UCLA who comes on and comments about it. Some really great interview lighting and setup, Rodrigo. It's very cool. And then, of course, pictures from the comics. But other than that, it's
straightforward.
It's pretty straightforward. I mean, it's not Ken Burns, if that's what you're looking for.
Right.
The other thing that's amazing is they do intercut a lot of not only comic book clips, but clips from TV shows. And this is an HD movie, but they're intercutting the old SD Batman, the animated series stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And they didn't bother to up-res it.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like crap. I mean, chunky lines around the characters. You see a lot of color separation,
right.
Chromatic abrasions that occur when you try to upscale something. And it just doesn't look good when they're using the old SD footage stuff. Narrated by Christopher Lee, which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
That is cool.
But it's worth picking up, I think, if you're interested in a very broad overview of what it means to be a villain in the DC universe. I mean, they talk a lot about the concepts that we've talked about on this show before. It's a movie. It's a documentary. It's like I said, it's not Ken Burns, but it's also not like your typical college movie 101 documentary that comes out. I'm giving it 2.5 slices of meatloaf. I probably wouldn't pick it up myself after seeing just the trailer, but you might want to do it. I mean, there's a little bit of good history, but it's very very just brushing over a lot of the characters. I mean, you're not going to go into 20 minutes of what makes the Joker tick, because they'll spend 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there, a minute there, a minute there, and that's it. So that is Necessary Evil, Supervillains of the DC of DC Comics. It's out this week from Warner Home Video. Let's get to at least a comic book review this week. Matthew, you took a look at the Teen Titans Annual number 2.
Yes. And then, 52 coming right at you. Clap, clap. I will preface this by saying I haven't been reading Teen Titans, but I saw some interesting feedback on the Teen Titans Annual number 2 out last week from DC Comics. Apparently, the Teen Titans now have Raven, which I think is pretty awesome. And they have been sent through time, space, and dimension, traveling around and basically getting lost. At this point, Kid Flash and the bug guy, or the bug girl, and the telekinetic, and the little girl who's all black and squiggly, what's her name? Threshold, or I don't know, Kid Flash's girlfriend, are all lost in time. In this issue, we find 20 years from now, Superboy, Red Robin, yum, and Wonder Girl all in the ruins of the Batcave. And I will say this for the issue. The art is really interesting. I mean, it's really kind of, I don't know how to describe it. Barry Kitson and Art Tiber, I think, are working together on the art. And it takes the best elements of both of their work and gives me something that I really, really like. Part of the reason that I haven't been reading, or had not been reading, Teen Titans was because of Brett Booth, whose art really turned me off. But throughout this issue, everybody looks really good. Wonder Girl has her cool little armored face thing. And of course, it being a future story, we get to find out horrible, horrible things about what happens. And they end up transporting to the Justice League Watchtower to see how many of the Leaguers are still alive. And the answer is Beast Boy. He's now known as Beast Man, which I guess is fine. I mean, I'm a He-Man fan like everybody else, but
sure.
What it breaks down to in the far future is terrible things have happened. It's the awful dystopian future that we have to figure out a way to stop. We cannot have these terrible, terrible things happening. And it turns out there is a new young future team of Teen Titans, which worries me, because the last time they did this in the 1990s, we actually got a book called Teen Titans, and it was pretty god awful. But throughout this issue, we find out that one of the villains of the piece, who has been part of this whole time travel thing, is the son of Superman. And they keep referencing the son of Superman, and the characters are like, yes, we know, we came here with Superboy. And Beast Boy Man is like, no, the real son of Superman. And we meet this actual son of Superman in Lois Lane, who is apparently an evil thing. And there's a big twist ending at the end, which is twisty and kind of makes me want to read Teen Titans, which I think is a pretty impressive achievement. I haven't wanted to read Teen Titans in quite a few years, but there was a time when it was a must-read book for me every month. I like the characters, the way they break down here. All of the problematic elements of the new 52 relaunches are still here, but they work for me. Red Robin, of course, was sort of trained by Batman, but now was never a Robin. And Wonder Girl is apparently a thieving little thief who's just in it, you know, for a joyride. And Superboy is dark and super dark and gritty because he's a clone. And in the Kryptonian society, clones are abominations. Kryptonian, Klingon, it's all really the same thing. You know, they're guys from another planet with funny things on their heads. But when I break it down at the end of this issue, it leads me, it says, next, you know, see what happens to Superboy in his own book. See what happens to the Teen Titans in Teen Titans 25, which I'm probably going to take a look at. That right there, I think, is the biggest selling point for me. The best bit that I can give you out of this book is I'm going to read the next issue of Teen Titans and see where this is going.
Cool.
3.5 slices of meatloaf for Teen Titans Annual number 2. Interesting book, and most importantly, I know that this is a minor thing and it shouldn't bother me, but Beast Boy is green again, and I'm good with that.
What was he, a different color?
It was red for a while.
Oh.
Beast Boy Beast Boy was red because he's tied into the Animal Man theory that Animal Man gets his powers from the red.
Oh, from the red, yeah, okay.
And Swamp Thing gets his from the green. Future Beast Boy is back to being lime.
All right. I'm okay with that, I guess.
Sure. I am too.
All right, so that's really the only comic review that we're doing this week. I did a movie review.
Well, we still got a trade.
Well, yes, but Zach is not here, so who knows what he would review. Probably the latest vinyl album that he was spinning the other day.
Yeah.
He was so happy about that.
Weekend. I really like the Vampire Weekend because there are vampires on the weekend.
I believe his review of the latest Arcade Fire album on vinyl was, "It tastes great."
You, Rodrigo, are reviewing a TV series, an animated TV series, The Awful Uncle Grandpa, right?
No.
What are you reviewing?
I'm reviewing the first episode of Steven Universe.
Oh, I hear that one's really good.
Yeah. It's been getting a fair amount of hype.
Stupid Uncle Grandpa.
I have not seen an episode of Uncle Grandpa.
You are lucky.
Is stupid actually in the title?
Yes. No.
Because that's what Widget calls it, too. I'm thinking that's actually the title of the thing.
It might be. So Steven Universe is revolves around the adventures of a superhero team called the Crystal Gems.
Oh, I like it already.
Yeah. They're Pearl, Amethyst, Garnet, and Steven.
And what people have been saying, I've been Jim for years.
And Steven, Steven has like the rest of the Crystal Gems, who have a magical gem somewhere on their person. Steven has a magical gem in his belly button, but he doesn't know how to use it. So, but he's part of the team because he's one of the Crystal Gems. So, this is kind of the this episode is actually two smaller stories, so it's like two 10-minute episodes within one. In the first one, we actually see him briefly activate his gem and summon his magical weapon. Apparently all the Crystal Gems get a magical weapon that they can summon through their gems. His is a shield, and it was pretty cool, but it goes away because he doesn't know how to, like, do it again or how to summon it. But he ends up saving the day by sacrificing a fridge full of ice cream that he was very looking forward to eating. And then in the second story, we see him interact with his dad and a surprisingly heartfelt moment for the very first episode in the show, where they kind of talk about what happened to Steven's mom, who used to be one of the Crystal Gems. So the game, yeah,
the
game,
truly outrageous.
You should watch the episode. Something pretty outrageous does happen. I don't know if it's truly outrageous.
Okay,
but it's fairly outrageous. You know, the show is showing a lot of good signs. It's really funny, it's really cute, and it's also showing some amount of future story and potential for backstory.
Right.
We get a fairly good view of all of the Crystal Gems' personalities, and they are very distinct. And part of the reason why this show has been getting a lot of good press is because it's a show that features a young man who is mentored basically by three women.
Mm.
And these women are very distinct, both in personality and in appearance. And it, you know, it's a good mix of personalities as well. So it, they're like very supportive of him, even though he's kind of a little screw up.
Yeah.
So it all comes across like fairly, like very, I don't know, very, very warm and fuzzy without being sappy. So I really enjoyed it. There's at least one cute song in it. Plus the opening song is really cute.
Yeah.
Also, I've heard I've heard some of the songs from upcoming episodes, and there's one song called Giant Woman that is just hilarious. Like, I was laughing so hard when I heard it, and I'm looking forward to the episode where that actually debuts. So, altogether for me, this is probably going to be a 4.5 slices affair.
And this is on what channel?
This is on Cartoon Network. Mondays at 7, I want to say, on Cartoon Network.
This is the same. Is this the same network that
this
does?
Is the same network
Uncle,
that does
Stupid Uncle,
Uncle
that's Grandpa,
that does Uncle
and
Grandpa,
Adventure
regular,
Time, and regular
not,
show.
Not Adventure Time.
Oh, okay, that's Nickelodeon.
No. You're right. Yeah. It is
Adventure Time. Plays yep. On.
Yep. No, you're right, because I think the head writer for this show, Rebecca Sugar, I think works for Adventure Time as well.
Cool. Oh yeah, I heard an interview with her just this past week. I forget what it's on. Was on Mark Maron show or Nerdist or something. It was really good.
And she's a really impressive person. She's like somehow the mousiest person ever. And she's a lot of fun to listen to, and apparently carries her ukulele with her everywhere.
That's awesome.
And will like just launch into a song in the middle of an interview. So that's fun. It would be a tight race between the two of them to see who's mouse.
You know, they're getting their own TV show.
Kate McCucci and Rebecca Sugar?
Yes. No, Ricky Lynn is getting their own TV show.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know if you heard that.
I think I maybe had. I don't know.
I'm excited about this. This Cartoon Network, what'd you say? What date is it?
Mondays.
I'm sleeping on Mondays.
Well, but you know, I didn't get a chance to watch it on Monday because I was doing other stuff. But the episode is already available on CartoonNetwork.com.
Hey, for free?
So yeah, for free. So that's where I watched it. So I mean, go right now and watch that, because the first episode of Steven Universe was lots of fun. I don't know what Cartoon Network's policy on how long they keep episodes up. I don't know what that policy is. Sometimes it's, you know, for some, in some websites they do it for like a week, sometimes a little bit more. So go watch it, see what you think. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. I am looking forward to this. I'm going to have to check it out. I think it's because I'd heard her interview and I had seen a couple of very positive reviews about this online. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, Rodrigo. And, wow, there we go. 2.5, 3.5, 4.5.
You know what that averages out to?
What? Awesome? That's because that's what I averaged it out. Oh.
Decimals!
Oh.
Three
whoa.
With a line over it.
Yeah.
Has to have the line over it. Reviews are done. This is the point that where means... I say head over to majorspoilers.com for more reviews, more news, more podcasts than we can shake a stick at. We've added a new podcast in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network, The Magic Minute. I'm kind of liking that.
Yeah.
And of course, you've got the Comics Portal opinion article every week.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Major Spoilers staff picks. If you want to know what we're looking forward to this week, you can find that every Wednesday morning. Costume contest, so much more. Man, if only we could have one more bit of awesome in the show.
Oh.
Well, that was kind of your cue to interrupt with the bit there, Matthew. What time is it?
There's a delay.
Right, I got 8:17.
Well, I'm on daylight savings time. In Baltimore, it's 6:42, but it's time. Well, the major spoilers, big heads, quite literally, poll of the week.
So this week, we cap off round four of our greatest Doctor Who villains two big heads, right? On the one hand, we have the Master.
Who, basically, by the way, has a 5-head.
Yes, he does. Yeah. And in the other corner, you have the Great Intelligence, who is kind of tied back into one of our previous polls of the week when we had the Yetis versus the whoever those Yetis took on.
Yetis fought the Daleks, I believe.
Or the Cybermen. I forget which one.
No, I think the Cybermen fought the...
Doesn't matter.
No, you're right.
It was Yeti versus Cybermen, Sontarans versus Daleks.
Yep.
Daleks, that's what it was.
And then
the Great Intelligence created the Yeti.
Yes. So he could scare people off from his great scheme.
Right.
Now, the Great Intelligence only works by taking over people's bodies or machines or whatever. He doesn't have a corporeal form, right?
Mm-hmm. So he's a floating thing in the astral plane.
Right. The Master, on the other hand, is a Time Lord.
Right.
He can regenerate. Wow. And as we've seen in, they took away all of his regeneration power, so he was like siphoning off other people or jumping into their bodies or whatever he was doing. Stolen their bodies.
He stole Nyssa's father's body. Nyssa was one of the Fifth Doctor's companions. The Master actually was introduced supposedly on his final resurrection or his final
body
regeneration, which is another reason why, you know, when people talk about can the Doctor regenerate past 13, the answer is let's talk about the Master.
Yeah, that guy's all kinds of wackadoo.
Right.
I always love him, though, because with his widow's peak and his evil mustache.
Yes. Mine is an evil laugh. Anthony Ainley, who played the second Master, actually, if you watch The Five Doctors, The Five Doctors is filled with people walking around going, it sure is great to be back on the show. We're really happy to be here. And then they cut to the Master and he's like, ah,
and just chewing the scenery up. Just chewing the scenery up left and right. It's awesome.
Nothing. Everything is just like, I am the Master. Wah, 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 wah.
So the big question then, Rodrigo, is who would win in a battle of the brains, of the big heads? Would it be the great intelligence or would it be the Master?
That is a very difficult question.
It is.
Because it really depends on...
So I'm letting you go first.
It really depends on what the great intelligence has lined up. These are both guys that are very comfortable operating through minions.
Right, right.
But the Master, obviously the Master's a lot more willing to get his hands dirty on account of actually having hands.
Right. I wonder what would happen if the great intelligence took over Davros's body.
What if the great intelligence took over the Master's body?
Boom, boom, boom!
So
think about that.
So I think in a battle between the great intelligence and the Master, the ones who would the definite loser would be the Santarans. But it is difficult. I would give it to the Master.
Yeah.
But clearly the great intelligence would get away. I mean, he wouldn't destroy it completely.
Right.
Because both of these guys have crazy escape plans. In fact, more than likely, they all take severe losses. But when you get right down, when you open the accounting books,
mm-hmm.
it's going to show up that the Master came out ahead.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's who I'm giving it to.
All right. I thought it was rather tough too because the great intelligence. It'd be hard to just have him take a poke at the Master,
right?
Because he doesn't have any form. On the other hand, you could probably kill the Master, and he would just regenerate. So you got that going for you.
He'd find some way to...
But I think that, for me, the winner is going to have to be the Master. Just because he's also Time Lord, and I think it's the regeneration thing. I'm sure the Great Intelligence, you could put some nullifier out there to nullify the Great Intelligence's presence. I'm Time Lord, remember. They can do all that
great
wibbly.
Intelligence nullifier.
A great intelligence nullifier. I'm going to have that surgically removed from you this Christmas, Matthew, for your birthday present. So the Master for me. That's who I'm picking this week. What about you, Matthew?
This one is extremely complex because there are a lot of ways you can look at this. You can look at this as straightforward. Can the Master find a way to overcome the Great Intelligence? Certainly. The Master is an evil counterpart of the Doctor. Does the Great Intelligence have the ability to overwhelm the Master with snowmen and yetis and frogs? Oh my. Yes, that's why he's the Great Intelligence. The Great Intelligence was once voiced by Sir Ian Magneto, which means that the Great Intelligence was voiced by Gandalf. But the Master was Roger Delgado in his original incarnation, who is utterly brilliant. Anthony Ainley, whom I love to death, the guy who played I, Claudius, was the Master for a while, followed up by John Sim, who once again left no scenery unchewed. I mean, you can't really break it down, but when you look at the Great Intelligence, his latest voice actor, Richard Grant, actually played the Doctor.
Yep, in like an audio drama, right?
Right. He was at one point announced as the official quote unquote Ninth Doctor before they actually relaunched the Ninth Doctor as the Ninth Doctor. But when you really break it down, they're both incredibly powerful. I had to go with the fact that we have a picture of Richard E. Grant and we have a picture of Roger Delgado. Richard E. Grant's real name is Richard Esterhuizen. Roger Delgado's real name is Roger Cesar Marius Bernard Delgado Torres Castillo Roberto. So right there, the master wins it because the man is named Roger Cesar Marius Bernard Delgado Torres Castillo Roberto. Say that 10 times fast, I know you won't. So I voted for the master.
So there you go.
Interesting meta approach.
Master.
Well, I had to break it down. I mean, this is Doctor Who. This is like fifth dimensional metaphysical kind of Framistad.
It would be interesting to see, and you know, as like I know the last time we saw the master, he had like melted into a puddle of goo, I think.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see somehow like a couple adventures of the master basically doing something that he probably does, but we don't see him do because he's always up against the doctor, is to be
right.
An evil version of the doctor and overcome either other eviler things or other evil things just because they're in his way. And see him apply that same kind of madcap like inventor-ness that the doctor has in an evil way.
At one point, the Ninth Doctor that Richard Grant voiced actually had a companion who was an android programmed with the mind of the master. So technically, the master actually worked for the man who plays the great intelligence. But again, Roger Cesar Marius Bernard de Delgado Torres Castillo Roberto.
I was afraid that you were just going to like sink into like a never ending loop there, because you're like, well, the Great Intelligence was voiced by Gandalf, but the Doctor was played by Radagast the Brown, which means
illogical. Like, that's how Kirk defeated the Mud's Women, right?
Yeah, he just started talking about Doctor Who.
And that Seventh Doctor was the last Doctor to face the original Master. Which, oh no, illogical, error.
How did the, pretty much from the comment section, everyone's like, master. How did the Major Spoilers Nation vote, Matthew?
I'm showing a whopping 88 votes at this point in time. 89, well, we're going to call it probably 90% of the people saying the master, 10-ish% leaning towards the great intelligence. And frankly, their argument, when you boil it right down, seems to come down to the Doctor beat the Great Intelligence several times.
Right.
The Master is an evil version of the Doctor. QED, evil Doctor, can beat something that the Doctor beat. It's that transitive property.
Yeah.
And I think it holds because we've seen other Time Lords who are not super badass. Or not as badass as the Doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
On account of they all died anyway.
Yep.
But the Master didn't,
Most of the Time Lords that we've seen are actually evil guys who went to high school with the Doctor.
Right.
Because there was the Meddling Monk, and there was the Ronnie.
You know, the Slytherins.
The Slytherin house.
Yeah. And then,
the Doctor went to Hogwarts. Or did the Doctor was he also Slytherin house?
No, he was House Lungbarrow. Three people just laughed. But most importantly, the only Time Lord that we met in those early days that wasn't pretty much an utter schmuck was Drax, who was just kind of a D-bag.
Romana.
But didn't we also see, weren't there a lot of times where we would cut to some Time Lord control room and there'd be people walking around twisting knobs?
The Third Doctor. Yeah, the Third Doctor, when they cut back and the president would be there and he'd be like, oh, look. Yeah, the Three Doctors, that happened, and the Five Doctors, that happened, and then it turned out that one of the Time Lords was actually behind the whole thing and trying to steal the immortality of Rassilon, who himself came back as Timothy Dalton and was, say it with me, crazy and evil and went to high school with the Doctor.
Can I just say, though, that it would have been nice... and I think it was Matthew that suggested this, if during, I believe it was the end of time,
mm-hmm.
when we see the president, played by Timothy Dalton,
right.
If somebody had shot him, and he
had to come back with a golden eye.
No, yeah, and he had regenerated into Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
Alternately, I would have loved to see a like Richard Karn play a Time Lord, and somebody shoots him, and he regenerates into Elaine's boss, and then somebody shoots him, and he regenerates into Steve Harvey.
That is very funny. Well, and the thing about it is, for a while, you know, Timothy Dalton did play Rassilon. Rassilon spent time on Earth himself as a Time Lord called the Spymaster in the 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, for a while he was Scottish.
Cool. Listeners, you can head over to MajorSpoilers.com. Cast your vote.
I have made that up.
Cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week, because next week is going to be costume contest. But then guess what's going to happen?
Uh-oh.
What?
New bracket. Yes, semifinals. We are going to take the winners from each of the previous four polls of the week and put battle them against each other and see who wins that. And then I don't know what will happen after that. Something.
I do.
I'm excited. I mean, Doctor Who 50th anniversary special coming up. We got the Christmas special coming up. Ooh, I cannot wait for all this stuff to roll out Doctor Who wise.
Doctor Who's eyes?
Yes, Doctor Who's eyes. And you know what, Doctor Who's ears? I bet you the doctor uses a pair of Tweaked Audio headphones from our friends at tweakedaudio.com. Because he's always knowing what's going on. And in order to know what's going on, you have to be able to hear really well. And Tweaked Audio headphones have great bass, great treble. They produce great sound. I love these Tweaked Audio headphones. Use them every single day in my many podcast listenings.
Mm-hmm.
Come in a variety of different colors.
Avoiding annoying people.
Yes, mostly. Yes, mostly.
And yet, if he's listening to our podcast, he just goes from avoiding annoying people at work to listening to annoying people on his podcast.
At work, yes. But yes, so many different colors, so many different varieties. And most importantly, listen, the doctor, if he wanted to, could get, 30% off?
Yeah.
Simply by entering the code MAJOR. At checkout over at tweakedaudio.com. 30% off for the doctor. You know, I've never seen that guy use money. He just flashes that little hypnotism badge or whatever it is, psychic paper.
Psychic paper.
I wonder if psychic paper works over at tweakedaudio.com.
Probably
listeners,
not.
You're going to have to find out. Go over there, order a pair now, use the checkout code MAJOR, and they'll be on their way.
There's a CAPTCHA. It won't work.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. We took a little beep break, so that we could go scramble for our trade paperback.
This thing weighs like 500.
It's like 300 pages. It's not the longest trade that we've read. I mean, Watchmen, I think, has more pages than this. But this is again just the first in I think 8 volumes that Dark Horse Comics put out. This week we are reviewing Akira.
Akira.
And I don't know.
Akira.
For me. This was, you know, not my first introduction to anime and manga, because, of course, Battle of the Planets, and if you didn't know that that was, you know, Japanese-turned-American cartoons.
Right. Speed Racer.
Speed Racer, all of that stuff.
Astro Boy.
Mm-hmm. For me, I remember in college I had a lot of Japanese friends. Yes, Godzilla. I had a lot of Japanese friends, and we'd hang out together and do silly, stupid things. But one day, Takashi and gosh, I forget the other kid's name. He was the
Joe.
He was the hipster. He was the
Nabuaki, I believe.
Probably. They're like, hey man, because he had just gotten back from a visit home, and they were being real cagey, and they're like, come up to the room tonight. We're gonna show you something. And I was like, oh yeah, Japanese porn.
Oh yeah.
But all no, right. Everybody crowds into this room. And we're watching it, and I just had I don't even think it was mine. We had a little 13-inch color television VCR unit, and he pops in this VHS tape, and he goes, okay, this is a super popular movie right now. And I was like, okay. And sit down, and the opening credits open, and it's Akira. And we're watching this, and then they start speaking, and it's all in Japanese. I don't know if this was didn't look like a legal copy that he had. Maybe that's why they were acting all cagey. But like every 5 minutes, I was like, what'd they say? And they're like, shh.
Guys, what are they saying?
But it blew.
They're yelling each other's names, dude.
It blew my mind. it blew my mind what was going on. I think the major part that I had them translate was the opening part where they're talking about how this explosion went off and then World War III happened. And then this is taking place in 2038 or whatever year it's taking place in. And everything else, I'm just mesmerized and transfixed about these little Methuselah children and floating bodies and motorcycle bikes that look totally awesome.
Yeah.
And then that summer, because I was so drawn into this movie, that summer I started tracking down the American version of Akira, the manga adaptation. And I think at that time it was done by Epic, I think, are the issues that I had.
Yes, Marvel Epic was doing it when we were in college in the 80s.
And they were super hard to find.
They still are.
Well, I've got them. But it was super hard to find them. And because I guess they'd already been out for like 12 issues or something, I was trying to find them and I couldn't find complete issues or complete run. So it'd be like I'd read issues 1, 2, 3, then 7, 9, 12, 15 through 18. And then it's like, ugh. So the story was super confusing, even translated. But a few years ago, and I don't know how long ago this was, Dark Horse collected these into bigger volumes instead of these little mini 3-issue collections or single issue collections. And we are taking a look at the first issue of Akira, the first trade of Akira from Dark Horse Comics this week. Rodrigo, what was your first introduction to Akira?
And it was a movie. I think I also saw it. I saw it when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that had always been in the background. Like, you know, as a kid, I'd always seen posters for it and stuff. And, you know, the posters are like real mysterious.
Right.
So I had no idea what it was about. And then watching it, you know, I had grown up watching some amount of anime, and the animation in a lot of these shows was clearly just head and shoulders above, you know, American animation.
Right.
And Akira is head and shoulders above that. I mean, animation is so clean and so tight and so impressive.
Yeah, especially that, when what is it? Tetsuo starts exploding into
like weird tentacle mass. Yeah.
And now, that doesn't happen in this first issue, but in that movie, it's just like I think I had nightmares after that.
It's really intense and it's really cool.
It's intense and it's oh man! And you get to a point where if you actually sit and watch the movie and have read the comics, you get to a point where you see things that have changed or things that have been excised or you know streamlined or whatever it is. And you kind of think, wow, this is not really an entirely faithful translation. And yet it's still so incredibly powerful and so just overwhelming. And it's awesome.
Oh, you did that sound in the movie. I think that's the first time you hear that big boom. Oh, it's just, it just brings back memory. I'm going to have to sit down and watch this.
Which then they just sampled and put in Inception.
Inception.
Is that on our
right.
Zach on film? Because we
Akira, it probably is. I don't have the list. Where the hell is the list?
Zach, where's the list?
Zach, oh, there it is.
It's tattooed on Zach's face.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I knew there was going to be logistical issues.
Yeah, we should definitely watch it.
Yeah, we'll definitely watch Akira. We're going to have to get that 20th anniversary Blu-ray edition thing because that one has all the cool stuff. I will do that.
You better.
Next Saturday? Anyway, here's the cool thing. Now, I don't know which came first, if it was the movie that came first or the manga that came first.
The manga came first by like almost a decade.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah.
So what's really cool is if you're familiar with both sources, you can see where they've actually literally lifted bits and pieces from like this first volume and just stamped it right down into the movie and vice versa. I think the part where it gets really weird is later on when they've got the religious elder doing crazy stuff. That story gets really expanded in the comic. But this first volume basically takes you all the way up to right after Tetsuo escapes from the military facility that he's being held. So if you know that part where, again, the whole psychokinesis, where he just bubbles out and smashes that guy and blows up the wall and the ceiling. If you know that part, that's kind of where this first volume ends. What about this world of Neo Tokyo, Rodrigo? Give us a rundown of what, why is it Neo Tokyo? Why, you know, what's going on in this world?
Right. So in the far off year of, I want to say 1997,
mm-hmm.
it's like 2000. Yeah. There's a major war, and a lot of major cities around the world are destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
A new kind of bomb is developed that is super explosive. And one of the cities that gets leveled is Tokyo. So they built a new Tokyo right over there.
Oh, and Neo means
a new. Yes, a Neo Tokyo.
New Tokyo.
So in this brave new Tokyo, there are lots of juvenile delinquents who have cool bikes. And the early portions of this book are mostly the adventures of juvenile delinquents and their cool bikes.
Right.
Other than that, it's clear that the country has become very militarized. I mean, I don't know anything about 80s Japan or 70s Japan as to how strong of a presence the military had, but it has a very strong presence here.
Yeah.
To the point where they're... You know, there's more soldiers than cops in Tokyo, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
We're also introduced to an underground organization that is working against the government, specifically because the government seems to have a very strange program. And I don't recall if the program itself has a name.
I don't think it does, but, you know, every time they hear the word Akira pop up. Everyone's like, oh, hush, this is Akira. a government program.
Which seems crazy to me because I thought that Akira was a fairly common name in Japan.
Was after this came out? No, I don't know.
So I wonder if they're like, every time somebody is like, don't mention Ralph. Everybody's like, oh, Ralph. Was that Ralph just now? No, that couldn't have been Ralph. He's not powerful enough to be Ralph.
I broke my Wookiee.
It's cooler than Ralph. Akira is like David, I think. Is
or a John, maybe, or a Bobby. No, not Robert.
Like a Clive?
There you go, a Clive.
Not a Clive.
But we don't really know much about what this Akira is, right? Is mm-hmm. it the bomb? Is that the thing that everyone's worried about? At one point, and this, again, for people that are familiar with the movie, the biker, Tetsuo and Kaneda, are driving out to the old bomb site where apparently they are trying to make over it. And that's going to be the new site for the next Olympics, which seems odd. If you've got a nuclear bomb blast that went off, that's like the first thing that I want to do is build an Olympic park on the radioactive fallout. How many years has it been since Chernobyl?
Probably 30.
Yeah.
Not quite 30,
but man, I mean, that place is still a radioactive hotspot.
They never say anything about radiation.
That's true. It is a new kind of bomb.
It's a new type of bomb.
Right.
And the bomb in the book that we're reading, the bomb hits in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like 2030 or
2038, I think is what it is. Yeah. So, yeah, it's right, good.
Because they're advertising the 2031 Olympic Games.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's 2028. Let me get back to that first page real quick.
I don't know. I know that the movie takes place further in the future. Because the movie actually takes place in a different time, I think. It's like 31 years, maybe?
Don't know.
38 years later. So they don't say, yeah, I guess that's why I'm thinking 2038, but yeah.
So 28 years later. 38 years later.
Yeah. Okay. But... suddenly, as they're riding along and hot-rodding it and hot-shotting it.
Yeah, and hot-dogging it.
And hot-dogging it and all the shark-jumping it.
Rodimus priming it.
Suddenly, there's this little old boy standing out in the middle of the road. Or a midget, a little old midget man.
Not old, that's what they say
in the book. That's what they call him in the book. Tetsuo just slams his bike into him, blows up, and the kid just... or the old man just disappears and people are like, what the heck's going on? And oh my gosh, the military police show up and drag Tetsuo off and they're just kind of let go to an extent. Yeah. And that's where the real mystery, that's where they start figuring out, you know, who's that little man? Who's this underground army? And so Tetsuo ends up, Kaneda ends up hooking up with one of the girls who's in this resistance group, and he doesn't know what's going on either, except he knows that this little old man has the answer to what's going on. And he finds out, well, he's really got Methuselah's disease. He's got a strange number 28 tattooed on his hand. Tetsuo shows back up, but he's got this massive headache, this massive migraine that I'm sure, Rodrigo, you can appreciate.
Yeah.
And things just kind of go downhill from there, Matthew.
They really do. And what's interesting about this story that it's been a while since I've seen the movie, I'll grant you. I don't remember in the movie either Tetsuo or Kaneda being this big of an ass.
Yeah. Tetsuo always was.
That's a definite thing, though, is like in the movie, there's almost, I think it's partially because there's no time, but you don't see what a colossal dick Kaneda is.
I call him Kaneda, but there,
Yeah, Kaneda.
You can call him Kaneda. His name is Kaneda.
Yeah, Kaneda. That's what I said.
Yeah.
No, you're also right. It's also not Akira. It's Akira. But, you know, again, it's kind of like the Mabuse discussion of a few weeks ago. I always feel like a colossal douche myself pronouncing it. So I'm going to go ahead and do it my way. But yeah, when we get to the point where the clown gang, who, by the way, terrifying.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're
the clown gang shows up and Tetsuo is like using his powers for the first time. Splattering their heads and crushing their skulls and throwing knives through their knife in the eye.
Oh yeah. And just, you know, like, you know, they're dealing with like chains with giant lug nuts on the end of it to beat
they're trying to kill him.
I mean, but he turns the tables on him and quickly takes over the gang. That's why it's really interesting. If you read the manga and watch the movie, you can see how things are cut and pasted because the opening scene where they're chasing the clowns is really the middle of this book.
Right.
And it's after Tetsuo has already had the encounter with number 28 or whatever his name is.
Takashi.
Yeah, Takashi. And so it's a little disjointed if you really love the movie, I think. For me, that's a little bit of a problem. But on the plus side, as we read through this, this fills in so many more of the gaps. And you realize that it's not only just Tetsuo who is a colossal dick. It's also Kaneda is also a dick too.
Kaneda is, he's a pill popper. He's a violent little jerk. He's impregnated the school nurse. And when she tells him, he's like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
He tries to force himself on Kay.
Right.
And throughout this whole thing, I'm like, I remember from the movie thinking, okay, Kaneda is the guy who's going to save us all. And in this, he's just this little 15-year-old turbo douche.
Yeah.
And I kind of want Tetsuo to telekinetically crush his skull like an eggshell. And that to me is kind of wonderful because I came into this with an expectation of who the characters are in the movie. And having, you know, read my issue here and there, I've never sat down and read big chunks of this story all at once, partly because A, they're impossible to find in, you know,
they really are hard to find.
And even if you find them, I've got one sitting on my desk at work. I've had it there for years. It's something where it's volume two and I wanted to read volume one. Now I've read volume one and I'm like, do I want to read volume two? Because I know I love that movie and I love where all of this could be going, but there's so much more depth to the character, to all of the characters, to the point where the depth is actually kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
And there's no hero here. There's protagonist A and protagonist Tetsuo.
Well, and I think the reason why it's hard to distinguish, you know, who is the good guy, who is the bad guy, is because we really don't know in this story. We've got this mystery of what is Akira. You know, we know it's something encased in a big bubble or a big capsule buried far beneath the ground at near zero.
Right. It's going to wake up.
It's waking up. It's causing all sorts of problems. And you've got the army led by the general, who's pretty badass in this, who's trying to keep a lid on it and trying to make sure that Akira
and
does
also
not come
wants
back
to get you a great price on car insurance.
Yes. And then you have, you know, Kay and the underground movement, which are trying to liberate something. Hopefully not Akira, because apparently that's a big bad thing that we'll later
clearly
find out about.
Clearly they're very misinformed about everything.
Right.
So, yeah, we don't know exactly what they think they are doing.
Kaneda becomes our through character, right? And then we have Tetsuo, who will become the antagonist throughout this piece. But again, we don't know that
right
at this point.
Yeah. I will say that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would say that a lot of the, like, in the same sense that, like, we're getting so much more story and so much more information, I would say in a lot of ways, this volume kind of meanders.
Yeah.
You don't feel like it's meandering until you finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because it's always, like, very fast-paced and exciting and interesting, but then, thinking back on it, I'm like, how many times was there a motorcycle race battle?
Yeah, that lasted eight pages.
And it's like three separate times. Mm-hmm. I was like, you could have taken two of those and made them one thing and just have all the... It's like, how many times do Canada and Kay lose track of each other and mm-hmm. then find each other again?
Mm-hmm.
It's like four or five times.
Yeah. The thing that you have to take into account here, and I say this a lot, is context, in that Japanese manga are not the comic books that we're used to reading. They're not designed to do the same thing. The comic books that, you know, we're designed to like to read, and the comic books that we've been reading all of our life, are basically kind of chapters of a story, kind of like individual episodes or even individual seasons of a television show in the traditional series format that we see in American TV. And manga is more like EastEnders or Days of Our Lives, in that it's designed by design, I think, the way that it always ends up being done, to be larger chunks over a larger period of time.
Yeah.
To the point where there are 400 pages in this first chapter, and we still get to the end of it. 350 pages. We don't really know what our central figure is. We don't know what the title means. We don't know what exactly the conflict is going to be yet, but we have a really good look at Neo Tokyo, at mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. amazing technology, the world building and the character building, and the fact that, you know, we have that moment 150 pages in where Tetsuo finally cuts loose and we realize, oh my gosh, he has powers now, he's a telekinetic or whatever. That's literally a third of the way through a huge thick volume.
Yeah.
So a third of the way through the first chapter of a 2000 and some page story.
Yeah. And
we're getting to that first fist fight, which would be, you know, page 10 of a Jack Kirby book.
Mm-hmm.
It's an entirely different pacing expectation.
Now, as I was looking to see how these volumes were released, and just going over to the wiki page, it lists six volumes, and the volume one that it lists on the wiki page doesn't say it's the Dark Horse collection, but I'm going to guess that that's what it's summarizing. You know, if this were something that I was picking up in Japan, this would seem about right mm-hmm. for something that would come out, you know, when it comes out. But, you know, I agree with you that it meanders, but this is still a quick read.
Yeah.
This is about an hour and a half read to get through all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it there's moves
of,
very
a,
quickly.
Yeah, there's a lot of action.
Motorcycles go vroom. Yeah.
And as I actually
and psychic powers are like boom
and vroom.
I couldn't help but see parallels last week's book, and you know, parallels in the this is kind of, you know, obviously that was something influenced by this, and this is like tons and tons better,
right?
But we don't have likable protagonists here or there.
Mm-mm.
We don't necessarily have a clear idea of what's going on throughout most of that five weapons. And when you look at this, you get to the end of it, and I'm not frustrated or angry that I've gotten to the end of this big, thick volume, and I'm still maybe, you know, 10 seconds into it, whatever, you know, the equivalent would be. It's kind of like when you spend 2 hours on Critical Hit, and that fight took 47 seconds. At the end of it, I don't feel like that 2 hours has disappeared, or that 47 seconds was, you know, something entirely different. You get sucked into this world, and Otomo does an amazing job of creating backgrounds, and especially the one that I keep seeing is around page 200. There's a double page spread of what looks to be this flying helicopter carrier thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe how incredibly cool how wonderfully detailed that two-page thing is. I mean, that is, that's got to be hours and hours of work. Look at the rendering and the cross-hatching and the design work. And it's there for like literally three pages and then gone.
Yeah, and if you look at, pretty awesome.
The design of Kaneda's bicycle, motorcycle, whatever you want to call it, that thing is a work of art.
Well, and that's, you know, I totally agree with you. And this is one of the cool things about the art in this story is, to me, this is what typifies manga, right? This is what you see when you pick up a manga comic book, or for the most part, because that's what's for, you know, 20 plus years has colored my mind of what Japanese comics are. Mm-hmm. And the art in here is just, I think, fantastic. It looks good. It's shaded just right. The characters are all expressive. Tries very hard to make sure that everyone is unique. Although when you get to the 15-year-old boys, they kind of get interchanged a little bit. And especially with, what's his name? Roy and, one of the other guys that's in the resistance movement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Roy, that's the American translation. Hey, Roy.
Hey, Bubba.
Have you seen the
Bubba Rastus? That's their big battle cry in English.
Yeah. Did you see the animation of the American Akira? That it's done by Happy Harry, the same guy who did the Saturday Morning Watchmen.
Uh-uh.
Where it's like when they announced that they were going to make an American version of Akira, it's like Kaneda rolls in and he's like, oh, the clowns have taken, like the government has taken Tetsu and we have to save him. And the prom is tomorrow. He's like, and then you hear like, don't worry, Kaneda, we can help him. And like his motorcycle's talking.
Yeah, that's great.
I have seen that with the talking. Yes, that's terrible. Terrible.
But the art is just fantastic in this piece, I think, from top to bottom. Yeah. Do you have any issues with the art, Rodrigo? Or?
No, not at all. I think that this is worth picking up just based on the art.
Oh, yeah, just the art. Yeah.
This is worth picking up even if it's not in English, because I have actually read issues of this book that were not translated.
Was the Marvel Epic, and I'm too lazy to go back and try to find the issues in my collection, weren't those English translated, but you had to still read the book backwards?
Yeah, they read right to left.
Okay.
As I recall.
Yeah, again, this is over 20 years ago, but this is a book that I think you just need to pick up, period, right? I mean, this is something you should have in your collection. The big question, though, is, do you want to read all six volumes? Do you want to read 18 to 2,000 pages worth of story?
Yes. And the reason why is because Kaneda has a motorcycle, right? And Kaneda's motorcycle is pretty important throughout this chunk of story, but it appears in maybe a quarter of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But the design work that went into that motorcycle is simply ungodly breathtaking. I look at that motorcycle and I go, how did he do that? How long did that take? That's amazing. And that is, you know, basically a prop for our main character. This is the equivalent of reading a book of say Batman and being fascinated by how incredibly cool the design on the Batarang is. And then realizing that even as you go to that larger scale and you go macro scale, everything has that in it. You know, we see Kay appear and I'm like, oh, look, token love interest. Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
She's got her conflict. She's got her thing. She doesn't necessarily have any interest in him.
Which is, you know, conversely, in the anime, Kaneda comes across a lot more sympathetic. Yeah. Than he does in the comic.
Right.
And conversely, Kay comes across as a character in the comic, whereas in the anime, she's just kind of there, if I recall. Like, she is not given a lot of development. And here, within this volume, she's given a lot of development. The most important one is that she can't stand Kaneda.
Right.
Right.
So, go ahead, Matthew.
And when we really look into that, I want to see if I can go through and read another seven, and I'm sure, absolutely sure that I can, based on what I've seen here, another seven chapters of this kind of douchebag and his super douchebag friend who's now a telepathic douchebag, and still be drawn in. I mean, we have a situation where we have kind of a villain protagonist in play.
Yeah.
We have, you know, a character who is definitely a wild card. There are mysteries here that are fascinating mysteries, not like maddening, oh my God, now she's blonde and 40 mysteries. There are things here that I, having seen the movie, having read bits and pieces and further issues down the line, I have no idea.
Yeah,
how it's all going to end. I have no idea how this is all going to pull back together.
Again, I'm going back through some of the history of the publication, especially the Epic Comics version of this. These are the ones that I did collect because they were colorized. One of the first computer colorized comics that came out. 38 issue run. I remember that I still have 37 issues. I went through and found all 37 issues, could never find the 38th issue because Marvel Epic was having such a tough time getting these final eight issues published that it was like 2 years between releases on some of these issues.
Jeez.
In this collection that we're reading, they reverted back to the black and white, but they kept the color, some of the color pages at the very beginning of each volume. So you could see what was going on with that. And that's the one that's published through Dark Horse Comics in 2000 for this printing this edition to 2002, also in the UK by Titan Books, which we see. So it's just, wow, it's just really cool. And I want to read more and I want to see how it ends. Because I just got into the habit of, I think I made it up to like issue 17, which would be about volume 3, I think, in this work. And I just lost interest in it because it was so hard to find the issues and skipping things and the bad release dates. But I would pick it up every time I'd see it saying, oh, one of these days I'm going to get through this. I want to see the giant space station fire off lasers down into, to Neo Tokyo. Because it's going to be awesome. And everything that happens after that.
I love the fact that this is black and white because the depth and the texture and the shading are a huge part of what makes this story fascinating to look at. If you look at just the way he uses his blacks throughout this, there are entire sequences that take place at night or, you know, pretty much in the middle of the night. But then you'll have like one giant light source or you'll have somebody flying over with a Blade Runner light coming down and I'm like, ooh, we need a lens flare. But just looking at these pages, and I've bought books, issues of this book that were not in English to look at.
Yeah.
You know, there are things where you're just like, oh my God, this is gorgeous.
Well, the good thing is, listeners, you can head over to Amazon.com and you can pick up this volume because it's still there. All the volumes are there. Bottom line, Rodrigo, final thoughts and bottom line.
The only way that I would not recommend this book is if you are squeamish about very violent things. Which it is very violent.
Right.
And if the movie is any indication, it gets more violent from here.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the only way that I wouldn't. If you can stomach it, then I would say absolutely pick it up because, again, it's worth picking up just on the art.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I say pick it up, read it, enjoy it, consume it. I love every minute. Every page is a joy to read. And so, like I said, it's a fast read when you have motorcycle things going on, fighting going on, running through the sewers going on. It's not going to take you. I know people think 300 pages of comics is going to take me a month to get through it. Nah, a couple hours. Pick it up, read it, enjoy it. Read it again. Matthew, final thoughts from you.
There are certain things that pop up in comic book circles a lot. And sometimes what I know I've heard are, I don't like manga because of X. And every single argument of, you know, because of X that you'll tell me you don't like manga, you need to read this. This defies all of your expectations of, I don't like manga because of X. I don't like it because of cartoony faces. I don't like it because of super deformed figures. I don't like it because of, you know, weird plot developments or things that are entirely cultural that don't make sense to me as a Western reader. This book is fully formed. It is flat out amazing. And I think that you should read it. You need to read it because it's amazing. And it's amazing in a way that you don't get in really a lot of cultures at all. But it also gives you an idea where you can sit and go, I can definitely see where, you know, this is something that influenced comics in Western comics in the 90s. This is something that became a part of our comic zeitgeist.
Yeah.
But, you know, Otomo was doing it 20 years earlier, sitting by himself in a room and going, hey, you know, it would be neat if. Plus, you know, you have to be careful. There are some curse words and there's some serious drug use going on in here. So I'd say, you know, 16 and over, possibly.
And adults beating the crap out of kids.
Yes. Adult beating the crap out of kids and thoroughly seeming to enjoy himself.
Yes, exactly. All right, listeners, that is Akira Volume 1. Go check it out from Dark Horse Comics. Really appreciate this. And this may become, for the next couple of years, one of those yearly books that we review. Get to Volume 2 next, then Volume 3, 4, mm-hmm. 5, 6. 6 more years of this, Rodrigo.
Yay.
Yay.
That's assuming that we're here in 6 years.
Yay.
Which, you know, I think we just might be in one way, shape, or form. All because of you, the listener, and everything that you do. And that wraps it up for this installment of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for everything that you do. Sneeze.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Next week on the show, we're going to be looking at, what do we got? Oh, Immortal Weapons.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome. Yeah. You know why? Because we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we will talk to you soon.
If you have any questions, comments, topic ideas for future shows, or would like to sponsor a show, send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. Visit majorspoilers@majorspoilers.com and be sure to check out the Major Spoilers forum. You can also follow Major Spoilers on Twitter at twitter.com/majorspoilers.
If I had the X-ray vision of a Superman, I could save some bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the rack. And although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he'd make me wait out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Way. If I was Hulk and green or gray, I could bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little me would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would you bag and board your comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, 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 yeah. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2013.